Welcome again, everyone, to our headliner program this morning, which is a panel on a very contemporary topic, respecting our diversity and building harmony. And we all know that diversity is a reality of life. Diversity can be a sign of health or a source of conflict. And so we've invited these very enlightened souls to share with us some insights on how diversity can actually, or is actually for us, a way of creating a world of harmony. And we have Brother Neville from the UK, and we have Sister Joan from Kenya. We have Sister Kieran from the United States. And we have Sister Tamsin from Australia. We've got five continents covered. We need Asia, then we would be perfect. But we're getting perfect. And moderating is Sister Luciana from Brazil. So I'm going to let Sister Luciana introduce the topic and the panelists and enjoy this very lively conversation.
Om Shanti, good morning. So I especially enjoy this kind of topic because I come from a sociologist background, and I always in my whole life was very much interested in understanding and studying the communities and the social system. So I'm very pleased to have this topic this morning, but I understand that it's not a favorite topic for the Brahmin family, just the ones with more of a broad intellect and an interest in social topics would be more interested in this kind of conversation, which is very important, especially if we live in this world and we do Baba service, so we must be enlightened about this subject. So Brother Neville, who I know since more than 40 years, he is an author, he is a journalist, especially specialized in medicine and science. And Brother Neville also, as you can see, and the ones who know him, he's a perfect English gentleman. And I especially love the laughter of Brother Neville. It's really amusing. Sister Joan, I know also since many, many years. Sister Joan, I was with her in the UN programs in New York many years ago. And Sister Joan is a resident in Nairobi, Kenya, BK Center, so she's a BK teacher. She is also a psychiatric doctor, and she is a former nun, which is quite interesting, isn't it? So Sister Kieran also many decades of relationship. She's a BK teacher in charge of the service in Oregon, in the United States, and many of us know Sister Kieran because she has an active role in the GIM, the Global Integrated Media, and also the international website related to the Global One. So Sister Kieran, she's very deep in her churnings, so we know her for the Raja Yoga courses that she has been imparting around the world, and also she's a very loyal Baba's child. Sister Tamasin, lovely Tam, that we also met many decades ago. Sister Tam is in Melbourne nowadays in Australia, and she's an anthropologist, like myself, but she's very active in that. And Sister Tam especially is an activist in terms of animals' rights and veganism, so that's also part of our conversation. And what I love her is about her courage and about her creativity. Many films also, Sister Tam is the main character in the film. So I think that for us to start, it's always good to have a light way to start. So I would like all of you to share, first of all, a personal story where you can give us a very clear example of diversity, that you were in a situation where diversity because of culture or diversity because of personalities were very clear, and how you managed that situation. So a practical story. Who is going to start? Who remembers? Because when Baba came, it was just one group of one culture, one place, so not many variety. Everyone is used to eat the same kind of food, the same dress and everything. So now we have all these challenges of being in many more cultures and backgrounds and so on. So a personal story. Neville Bai.
Good morning, everyone. Om Shanti. It's really nice to be back here in Madaban. It's because of COVID restrictions, and also GRC has been undergoing, that's the Global Retreat Center at Oxford, where I live now. It underwent a very big renovation, and so I was doing other things the last 3 years. So this is lovely to be back. And I believe there's quite a lot of you are here for the first time, so that's wonderful, really wonderful, very special welcome. GRC is really a big mixed pot, you know, of cultures and personalities. And Daddy Janki would always say that we're just the Brahmin culture. You know, this was what she tried to get us to think in that way. But the fact is that when you have got very different backgrounds, it really takes some time to understand one another and value one another. And I would say that that was one of the biggest fruits of my years at the retreat center, that there are times when it's difficult, but those are times where you feel as if the sculptor, you know, Shiv Baba, Brahma Baba, Bap Dada, the drama is shaping you, knocking off the hard edges of personality that are resistant or that insist on my way and that kind of thing, knocking them off gradually over the years, so that eventually you become like this soul, you know, something that is underneath all of those personality things. It's not that you destroy your own personality, but you somehow you find your way through to the beauty of the inner being, and with that, the acceptance of the beauty of what each other one can offer to the community. In a nutshell, that's my experience. I value it very highly, even though at times it's been painful.
Do you remember one specific situation when it was painful that you had discussed? Kind of clash in terms of culture or personality?
One. I think when Daddy Janki was still around and she was supporting us, it was as if her spiritual power was behind us. And so that would help to melt our individuality, our egos stuff. But after she moved to India and then passed away, we had a period where it was harder. It was as if we didn't have her spiritual power seeing us through these different perspectives, and that was quite painful. That was harder than the first 15 years. When her spiritual power melted our differences. So, but then, you know, the fruit of that has been, and I'm sorry if I mustn't speak too quickly, because I'm remembering this translation. The fruit of that has been that especially with this stepping back for 3 years and coming back now, because for 6 months we've been back in the building again, working together, there's a new respect for each one. It's amazing. You know, you need to be tested by the drama in order to be able to see the things that are in the way of your beauty and your acceptance and your power. So it's okay. That would be my big message, actually, after all these decades with Baba. It's okay. You know, when there are times when things feel really hard, but it's okay. That's part of the process.
Okay, Sister Tamasin wants to go.
So this is a slightly different story, but from a different perspective. So in 2008, I lived in Orissa for 6 months. And
Orissa in India?
Orissa in India. So it's a very tribal area. It's on the east coast near Andhra Pradesh, below Bihar. It's very tribal. Many of them had not seen a foreigner before. And as one sister asked me, is everybody in foreign pink like you? I'd never thought of myself as pink, but and we were doing disaster relief. There'd been a flood. And so we went out to the villages, and I was in my white sari, and then the villagers wanted a photo. So we all stood together, everyone in the village and myself, and took a photo, and I didn't think anything. You don't think anything, you just think, I'm here with these beautiful souls, these beautiful beings in this village, and it's a privilege to be there. And then I got back and looked on my phone, and it was a real social snapshot. So there were a lot of children, mainly boys, hardly any girls, and everyone was very dark skin and coloured clothes, and me in this body with white skin in a white sari. And it occurred to me that whether we like it or not, our physicality, our presence in the world, socially, culturally, historically, says something, and it often is a statement of power, even though we don't want it to be. And I realised in that situation, I just felt I was with my family, because this is our training from Baba. But at the same time, I realised that I was the one in the power in that picture. I had affluence, had white skin, which represents a whole lot of things. You know, our bodies represent so many things. So it made me realise that the practice of soul consciousness, of seeing of seeing brother souls, it sounds so simple, but I found it's a way to penetrate those limitations, because those limitations are very real, and those power differentials are very real. But this practice that Baba gives us is a very powerful practice. And there are so many things that can divide us in the world, and this is something that connects us in the world. And so I found during my time in Orissa, this was a deeper practice. And whenever I had that practice, my relationships would change in those contexts. So that was just something
Yes, beautiful. Beautiful, because it's true, isn't it? Even if we have this soul consciousness, but our physicality just gives us a lot of information, and it's a message that we put into the world. So, John, maybe you now?
Om Shanti. Thank you, Sister Luciana, for this opportunity. You have heard that I've been with the institution, it's over 40 years basically, because 81 is when I got Baba's knowledge. And being from a background of the convent, one exam that I had to face was the fact that from the convent to the center, coming to do my meditation and then going back to the convent, there was the diet part. We were nuns with almost the same principles apart from food. In the center, people have the same principles apart from food and Amrit Vela. So the nuns decided to give me a test paper. And the test paper was, can she do without food, especially we are not going to cook any vegetables so long as she's around. And I remember I had already mentioned to Baba that this body and the mind are surrendered to you. You have to see what to do with them. At the right time, if you want me to leave my physical body early, let it be. But I will have tried my level best. So they decided to do that. So for one good month, a convent which had been having lots of vegetables was having no vegetable. The bell is rung, you go on the table, you are not allowed to cook, you are not allowed to step in the kitchen, you are not allowed to do any other thing which is outside your room and the dining table. So, like that, food could be passed, and I passed my exam. I would tell them, start from the other side of the table. When it reaches me, there would be nothing. So I didn't mind. So I think I stayed on boiled rice and once in a while salad for nearly 1 month. And I felt very fresh. I felt very fresh. On the other side, coming to the center, there was international community. The sisters were from all colors and all languages like that from my convent community. I joined the community when I was quite young. I think in my early adolescence, I was nearly 16 years old when I joined the convent. So coming to the center, the main language that was being used at the center was Gujarati language. So that diversity had to be felt, because one thing during those earlier days, Baba's Muli was not coming in English so quickly. Those early 80s, Baba's Muli was never coming. You had to be in the morning class to get translation. And the translation was always dependent on the person who was seated next to you, who could balance the two languages. And so, if the person felt that certain words were not conducive to you, coming from the convent background, it was skipped. And if the person felt that, okay, this one and one would be good enough, it's good for sustenance, then it would be passed over to you. And then the worst came when we were to travel around 70 kilometers. We had to stay in another place for the first time as nuns and Brahmins. We were around 7 nuns who had taken Baba's knowledge. So we were going for a retreat, a powerful meditation, and we were going to stay in one of the centers. And from the center, we were going to what we called a garden. It was a coffee garden with variety orchards belonging to one of our Brahmins. So we were to stay there, have our Brahma Bhojan, do our meditations also there. And then Ben mentioned in Gujarati that you come with all your things from where you are staying to that garden, because from there we are going to leave, we are going to go back to the center. People like us who didn't understand the language did not carry our luggage. So towards the end of the day, people were just entering into vehicles and leaving. So I said, now, which is the vehicle going back to the other center? And everyone looked at me as if they were so surprised that I didn't understand the instructions. Eventually, things became lighter. Of course, a vehicle dropped us. We collected our luggage and things went on well. So I decided that, you know, I should understand more of Hindi, because there would be some type of, should I say, confluence between Gujarati and Hindi. If you understand Hindi, then you would understand Gujarati also. That's what took place. One brother took it upon himself to start teaching us Hindi, and that was easier. And again, Baba's remembrance, because a lot of patience was required. And that became easy. So I can fit in any environment. I can stay with any category of people. And I always feel that when I stay in Baba's remembrance, it becomes easy to connect with other people.
Sister Joan, very interesting experience, because you are saying that even inside of the Brahmin family, there are possibilities of different cultures and diversity and opinions,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So thank you so much, Kiran Ben.
Om Shanti. I've been remembering Chandra Didi a lot. She left us this past year, so I want to tell her story first. And she used to tell this story how in the Indian culture, it's very, you know, when you come to the end of a meal and they're offering you more food, you kind of say no, but they know you don't really mean it, and they keep putting food on even though you say no, until finally you cover your plate that's no. So she came to the West, and she was invited for tea somewhere, and she drank her cup of tea, and they asked her if she would like more. So she said no, expecting that they would fully give her some more, and they didn't. And that was a big shock for her, a culture shock. And I always used to reflect on how these seniors, like Mohini Didi, Didi Nirmala, all of them, Chandraban, they came from India to these other countries, and they had to adjust to so much difference in culture and standards and dress and everything, you know. And so in San Francisco, where I took my Brahmin birth and grew up, we were a very diverse group. We had African American, we had Filipino, we had different ethnicities in the center as students. So we always were learning to adjust and learn about each other's cultures and ways. And it was kind of a normal thing. It was expected. It wasn't anything unusual. And I remember, again, Chandra Didi going on a tour to Europe and coming back, and her remark was, in the class, they're all blonde, blue-eyed, tall, and she went to some Scandinavian center. And so it's different in different places in the Brahmin world as well. For me, understanding cultural differences has been a lifelong learning. And only recently, maybe a few years ago, I understood that in the Indian culture, when an elder person enters the room, you're supposed to stand up, you know, as a sign of respect. And I think I spent two-thirds of my 40 years in Brahmin life not doing that. And I was thinking, oh, how many times people must have noticed, oh, they're from the West, you know, they don't have any manners. Just because I didn't know, you know. So in terms of diversity, those are the kinds of experiences that I've had. But I just think we should really honor the fact that Baba started in India and sent all of these instrument souls to all corners of the world. And they really had to learn so many different things in order to gather us all together now. Mm-hmm. And we really should respect that and honor that, their courage, their flexibility, their adaptability, and, you know, how they've come to accept us all, regardless of our backgrounds.
Thank you, Kiran. Then it's true. All the sisters who came from India, they had to learn a lot. We know many stories about how Didi Nirmala especially faced the Australian world. And it might not have been so easy. But one other subject related to that I wanted to bring now to our conversation. It is about Baba says that one of the characteristics of Kali Yuga, it is to have many opinions. So Baba says very clear that, you know, like, even if you have information, even if you have science, even if you have knowledge, you still have many, many opinions. And we are living in a time, on a time, that especially that's the reality. We have such a polarization. So we are very polarized in terms of political ideas. I just came from Brazil, and we just had election now recently, and the country was absolutely divided, 50 and 50, killing each other, literally. And we had COVID just recently, and the world was polarized in terms of having vaccine, not having vaccine. And then, in the Brahmin family, a group of us, like Tam, myself, we have become non-dairy consumers. So, are you accepted as a vegan or not accepted? So, you know, you point out, oh, but Sister Jent is also vegan. She's on our side. But on the other side, you see Sister Mohini and Didi Nirmala, whoever. They are not. So it's so polarized. So my question to all of you is, how do you navigate in such an ocean of opinions? So how do you conduct yourself? And I would like to ask you to be brief so that we can hear everyone. What is your approach to so many opinions in the Brahmin world? Who wants to start? From here, yeah?
My approach is aligning with the notion of Maryada Purushottam. Baba's teaching us to become the highest among humans, and he's given us disciplines to enforce that, to allow that. But we're living in a world that is changing and becoming darker. And my understanding is I have my foundation principles, but I have to... It's a dynamic life we have. It's a yajna. It's a flame. Our lives are dynamic. So my job, I feel, is to make sure I continue as best I can living Maryada Purushottam, living ahimsa, without harm as much as possible, hence my decision to be vegan, and hence to moderate and navigate my Brahman life on a dynamic basis in a rapidly changing world.
Thank you. Peter, you can be next.
So I will just tell a little story from the rabbinical tradition that kind of represents my point of view. So these two people were arguing, and they went to the rabbi for an answer. So he listened to one person, and after he listened to him, he says, "Yes, you're right." Then he listened to the other person. And after the other person finished telling his side of the story, the rabbi said, "Yes, you're right." Then the scribe, who was sitting behind writing everything down, he said, "Rabbi, they can't both be right." And the rabbi said, "You're right." And to me, that epitomizes the point that I like to think of when it comes to all this polarization, that everybody's right from their own point of view. And what's needed is just acceptance, that whatever their point of view is, they're right from that perspective. Now, what I do is I try to not take sides, but for example, veganism, I'm probably 90% vegan, but I still like butter, so I haven't finished that yet. So, you know, and other things too. I'm listen to both sides, and then I make an informed decision based on what feels right to me. But I accept that everybody has their opinion, and what's right for someone else is right for them. And I try not to judge anyone for their decisions.
Yes, John.
It's good to know that opinions are different, and yet they are to be respected. I always refer to the word child, which Baba makes us go into the depth of, that when you are giving your opinion, first of all, you are a master at that time. You are giving your opinion, but once you have given your opinion, be a child. This becomes a Brahmin. Because your opinion could be right, but it might not be practical. You know, the circumstances could be so different. So we give everyone a chance, but then at the same time we jot down the points. At the end, we have to see whichever could work for us as a group at that period of time. So being a master and then leaving your post at the right time, that idea makes me feel very, very happy. Listen to everyone. Know that they have the right to give their opinions. And vegan or no vegan, I always look at the way the cancer cells are germinating at the moment. You can be with a person and then all of a sudden you hear so-and-so whom you have been eating the same foods with is all of a sudden a cancer patient. What will you say? Has there been some mutation? Has something happened which is difficult to understand? So each one will understand their body accordingly, and then so long as we are vegetarians, so long as we are working on our principles that Baba has set for us, there should be no cause for alarm. We accept them the way they are, their opinions, and then we continue encouraging each other. Om Shanti.
Never by.
The night before I flew to India, I was at a conference in London, about 1,000 people, called A Celebration of Dissent. Dissent, not descent, but dissent, disagreement. And it was organized by the editor of a publication for whom I've written many articles on COVID over the last couple of years. And she and the publication have taken a very strongly critical stance towards the what she sees as the corrupt science that lies behind the fear-mongering and the mistaken policies. So it was very interesting to see a kind of anger present there, and yes, some compassion for the victims of this situation. Many, many people who have been organizing to try to support victims of the vaccine who have long-term injuries from it. And they were speaking of how they have been censored and the medical profession don't want to know. And these individuals who've been injured were speaking of how they feel discarded. And so there was a lot of anger present. And I felt, okay, it's understandable, but I don't feel that this is where I'm at. And in my writing, I had always tried to be quite just factual. I do think that the facts support the critique, but I don't think that this anger is helpful. And on my flight, the Murli that I was reading was that Murli the other day where Baba spoke about there's the limited, where he was referring to the golden age, the limited population, the one direction, and then the unlimited, you know, the multiplicity of perspectives and opinions and everything else that we have more and more in the second half of the Kalpa as the tree grows. So Baba kind of gave that acceptance with that idea that it's unlimited. There are all the different views, the Maya, the correct things, everything is present now. And then he was saying, go beyond the limited and the unlimited to the home, because that's where you're going home soon. And I loved that. I felt that really lifted me out of the dissent of the previous evening. Dissent is right. There are times when, like with Tamsin, with her work to try to draw attention to the cruelties that humans have been inflicting on animals. It's good to dissent, but within that we have to somehow also hold in mind that this is a time where we are renewing ourselves with that one taste of that oneness with Baba. I love this game. I don't want to be pretending everything is okay. It's not. There's a lot wrong. But the challenge of facing the fact that there is a lot wrong in ourselves and in others and in this society, and at the same time going beyond that with this beautiful taste of what it means to be beyond with Baba, that is a beautiful element of this Brahmin life. Mm.
Well, this brings to my next question, which is very much aligned with all of this, because we feel that in the West especially, there is a margin for us to express our individuality and that we are different from each other and so on. But at the same time, we have our Maryada Purushottam conduct rules. How do you go beyond all these questions of opinion opinions and still be genuine to your beliefs. Like, for instance, one, because I've been very open in the Brahmin family. I'm known as someone who has been very clearly expressing myself. And Sister Jendium said to me, "Oh, Luciana, you are too much like a window shop." Because I express too much what I feel and I believe. So how to keep this Baba system in mind, but still to be real to it, or genuine to your beliefs and to your the things that you think that they are important, and connected, how to move also from these opinions in the sense that we are creating golden age. Because in golden age we are not going to have opinions and diversity. So how to be genuine now, but also how to keep in mind the creation of golden age. So who would like? Kiran, maybe you can start this time.
Well, I don't know that I have the answer for this question, but what just comes to my mind is really acceptance. And not just acceptance, but recognizing in the Brahmin family that we all were together and we have been together all through the kalpa. And we may not know each other that well in this particular life, but I'm sure we had lots of connection throughout the cycle. So we are all one family, no matter what kind of nationality or culture or faith background we came from. And as such, we have a lot in common. We have Baba in common. We have so much love for Gyan and yoga and all of these things, you know, so let's focus on what we have in common, our love for service and what we can do together, and let's accept our differences and acknowledge that variety now is the spice of life and that it's okay for us to be different. And whether you wear a Punjabi and I wear a sari, what difference does it make? That's still part of body consciousness, right? So if we really see each other as souls, all belonging to the same family, all moving forward together, all having our own unique specialties, which Baba has selected us for, and trying to find those and, you know, bring those forward in the field of service and in our relationships. To me, that's how we come together and move forward towards Satyug. Om Shanti.
Who wants to go next? John, you want to go next?
The programs that we continue holding, regional programs and international programs, they actually keep reminding us of unity in diversity, but at the same time accepting the fact that where you are an instrument there. You are there because a role is there to be played, and it has to be played to the best of your ability. And when we understand that, of course, the uniqueness of this person adds an ingredient to the Brahmin family which might never have been felt before, it makes us feel excited. You see, at the moment when we hear of this sister is called who? The one who whose videos, whatever are almost everywhere in the world. Sister?
Shivani.
Yes. Whenever we are in Nairobi, we just hear from people that, do you know what? I listen to Shivani every day. I might not be coming to the center, but I listen to her. And she's very practical. I listen to such and such a person, like somebody from Canada who is in Gabon at the moment, who is originally from Gabon. Gabon is part of our African country and is close to Cameroon, close to DRC. She rings me and she says, you know, I saw you on the web and I understood knowledge because I realized that our institution is international when I saw you. But I have done my 7 days introductory course and I've been listening to my mulis. How is she connecting? She connects to Madhuban. She's in Canada. She connects to Madhuban. She has done her introductory course through that. So you realize that somebody might be offering something in a country or in a continent which might be very diverse. And it might appeal to certain personalities in other places. And, you know, I asked her the number of years she has been, with the institution. She said 3 years, but the reason why I'm contacting you is because I want my people of Gabon to be served. She wants people of her country to be served, especially the family members. So that we just have to accept our diversities and what a person is capable of giving in full amount. We just have to give them vibrations so that they continue, because that is how Baba will be glorified. That is how our family will be glorified. Instead of feeling from deep within, why don't I have the qualities of so and so? I might never have their qualities. So whatever I have, that is what I have to work on. But at the same time, continue giving vibrations to these specific type of souls so that they continue giving Baba's message the way they can. That's how I look at it.
Thank you. You want to go or Neville? You go, Timothy.
Okay. So I grew up in the country, surrounded by nature. The forest of Australia was my playground. And sometimes I would see the leaf of a eucalyptus tree. And I would try and find another leaf exactly like it. And I would spend all day, I've got this leaf, there's got to be another one like it. And because there's so many leaves on the ground, right? And I'd go everywhere. And I'd find all these different leaves. I wouldn't find a leaf like that. It used to amaze me. I think, how is it possible? And then I'd look at the trees and the same thing. There's got to be another tree like this one. And I just used to get become awed by experience this awe of the differences. And the other day I was down at Solar and JC Ma gave me this leaf, and the leaf was red on one side and green on the other. And I was thinking, it's a little bit that relates a little bit to your earlier question about opinions. So I said to him, he was looking at the red side, I was looking at the green side. I said, is this leaf red or green? And he said, red. And he was telling the truth. And I could say green, and I was telling the truth, because we saw it from our different sides. But I think the thing that that strikes me is that we are also different. There is not, we cannot begin to be compared to each other. I look at all the faces here. I mean, we're all in white clothes, but that's about the only similarity. We are so distinctive. We are so unique. Like there is not another one of us. A soul cannot be replicated in the world. The value of that is something I just find extraordinary. And I do like the metaphors of nature, because nature has the inherent laws of the drama within it. That's my experience. And so in terms of that, the fact that diversity is everywhere, even among the leaf, which is, you know, they're both green, they're both from the same tree, there is not another one the same. The miracle of the leaf, you know, the miracle of the seed, there's one like it. So that, to me, is a, that attitude is a way to embrace diversity, and that's, Baba has taught us that. He comes and he says, there is only one. There's only one of you. You are unique. You know, and to feel that sense of awe. And I think the sense of awe, which they say is being lost in the world now, like children are losing the sense of awe in nature, but that sense of spiritual awe that Baba awakens in us is something that enables, that I found very powerful, and a way to embrace the diversity of who we are.
Neville, I just want to say something according to what Sam has just shared, because I think that it's appropriate to our topic of diversity. Not just we are all different, but where we have been placed, we are perfect for that environment and for that situation. Because you know that the eucalyptus trees, they were brought from Australia to Brazil, and they are the main source of producing paper. So immense areas being planted with eucalyptus trees to produce paper. But they are a plague because they destroy all the natural and native vegetation. And they absorb an amount of water that it's unlimited. So you see, the eucalyptus trees, they are very beautiful and healthy in Australia, with the bush of Australia and the koalas and the kangaroos and so on, because they eat that plant. But like in another situation, in another environment, the same beautiful tree can become a plague. Huh? So Neville, you now.
Well, picking up on what you were saying, Luciana, I feel as if I was a eucalyptus tree that had been moved from where it should be, and, you know, was, had an element of poison and neediness. And that's how I found myself when I came to Baba. And so, in my experience, because of that ignorance, that stone intellect with which I came to Baba, not understanding the beauty of the soul or God, that emptiness and neediness was recognized. And so when I came to this family, I thought, oh, well, I'd better be like everybody else. You know, wear white, have a big badge, speak softly. In fact, not be myself, but try to be something other than I was, because I didn't like what I was. So my experience is that the more I've studied, and, you know, I've kind of come and gone with the knowledge. Sometimes I'm busily engaged in the world. Sometimes I get opportunities to deepen my understanding. But over the years, the more the penny has dropped, as we say in English, that I really am a child of God, the more I can be myself. And this was true with the daddies who were being remembered earlier, that the daddies were so unique. They were not like they'd come out of some, you know, school for daddies, all stamped out the same. They were totally unique because they were so soul conscious and God conscious. So it's as if there are these two aspects to it, that there are bits about ourselves that we may not like when we first come to Baba, and so perhaps it makes some sense to not to just express them, you know? I think perhaps that's a good thing, you know, to, because you're trying to be something different. But as soul consciousness develops and you feel that you're understanding your limited self better because you know yourself as a soul and a child of God, then it's as if you, Neville is, I can see him a bit as separate from me, and I can be quite more indulgent to him, like he's a child, you know, makes mistakes, gets upset about things sometimes still, but that's okay, you know, I'm okay, because I'm not Neville in a sense. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that's clear, but definitely, gyan, the more it penetrates us, the more we're able to flourish in our beautiful individuality.
One word that I really love, because I think that it can express this diversity and this unity that we want to have in the Brahmin world, the Brahmin family, is complementarity. This word I really, really like, because I'm not exactly complete and perfect. I become complete in the sense of the qualities of others together with mine qualities. So you want to say a word about complementarity, and the traffic control will come soon. And I have two more questions. I think that we have till 12:30. So I have two more questions after that. Insight about what complementarity means to you, or how much it's important to you, or even if you have an example on how this quality of complementarity has been crucial in your experience.
May I?
Yes, sure.
I'm very enthusiastic about this question and this topic, especially because of the Oxford experience. I would say this word summarizes the better place in which we find ourselves now. And it's because of the growing experience of ourselves as souls, distinct from Neville or, you know, the parts that we play. Because the more we identify with the individual part that we have, the more defensive we are of that and tend to be more rejecting of others. But the more we step back into soul awareness and God awareness, then the part that I'm playing, I see much more clearly how limited I am. You know, I have my specialities, but my limitations. And once I'm facing that, then I appreciate how this one can do that, and this one can do that, and I couldn't do that, but this one is doing that. You know, and so we see how we complement one another as a team. And when you move into that consciousness, love increases and judgmentalism finishes. It's really lovely. Beautiful point.
You can plan a new book on this topic, maybe interviewing different people about their experience, something like
well,
this.
Well, it really is a great topic, yeah. Thank you.
So, a brief insight about complementarity. Who would like to go next? Okay. Joan wants to go.
Complementing each other is a very important thing. Because most of the times when we meet, we introduce ourselves by the number of years we have stayed in Baba's knowledge. And most of the times there is expectation. With the number of years, the expectation is very high. And expectation starts from Amrit Vela time. Amrit Vela time is usually a very shaky time for most of the Brahmins. And in normal cases, you expect a Brahmin to wake up very early, remember Baba, accumulate something. It's that time when you start realizing that, oh, so-and-so told me there are how many years in Gyan? Do you know I left them snoring, I left them asleep, I left them doing this and that. We start comparing. I always remember one specific thing that Baba had mentioned. These souls who have been there for a long period of time, they might not have inculcated much, but because of the fact that they have persevered, there is credit that is behind that. There is credit that is attached to the fact that they have persevered in spite of some shortcomings. So in our Brahmin path, we look at the values, the virtues, the powers that others are having, and then we use those ones. We use those ones especially for our programs, for our daily activities. We use them because others are good speakers, others are very powerful meditators, they love solitude more than anything else. Others love just to share smiles, just to make other people feel comfortable. They are there to compliment other people. Every now and then, somebody performs a very small activity. For you might think it's small, but that person would be there to just highlight that part of activity that you have performed. You give energy to this personality who most probably was going down the drain. When we compliment each other, then there is always a possibility of making other people, you know, walk with their faces up instead of down. You know, they feel welcome, they feel loved, they feel appreciated. Doesn't matter how much you are capable of giving. Because we always say, there is no one in Kali Yuga with no virtue. It is only the degree that is different. So, doesn't matter how small that virtue is, if you compliment that person, then that virtue, which used to be so tiny, would, you know, it would start manifesting and it would help in variety forms of services. So it's our duty as Brahmins to continue complimenting each other. It's our duty as Brahmins to continue looking less on the negative side of other people. Look at their positivities, and that will help us progress as a family.
Kiran Ben, please.
It's a beautiful word because it has this double meaning, right? Both of complimenting and also completing. And I think also for me, the completing part is really one of the three certificates we have to claim from Baba, besides faith in self, faith in self, faith in Baba, faith in Dharma, and faith in the other members of our Brahmin family. And that's where we really, it comes in that, the complementariness of our ability to work together and working in teams. And you cannot do anything by yourself, really, if you're going to have a big impact. So you need to know how to work together and make everyone's skills complementary. And it's been my privilege to witness how in the U.S., when we first started meeting together as instruments to where we are now meeting together as instruments, such an amazing transformation has taken place from being sort of territorial and everybody in their own little ego sphere to now really working together in such a beautiful way and wanting to help each other and putting each other forward. It's, you can just see the wonder that is Baba in that. And I know that that's what he's doing for all of us wherever we are, no matter what it looks like at the moment. It's all moving eventually to that kind of beautiful, harmonious dance of sanskars and completing each other. And so faith in Baba is that he's taking us all there and it's only a matter of time. Om Shakti.
My most difficult experience being a Brahmin was self-acceptance. Honestly speaking, I really thought I should be like Sister Janti. I should be like Sister Sally, Brother Charlie. You can pick anyone here, actually. And I never quite fit. And I always thought I should be a sister in a centre. And I've done that, but it never fit. And I thought, there's something wrong with me because I'm not fitting in the job that I'm supposed to do, which if you surrender to Baba, you're a sister, you're a teacher in a centre. And it was really tough. So I felt I couldn't really, until I accepted myself and accepted the part of Tamasin, which is not me, but I can't operate without her because it's the life, it's this life. I couldn't compliment the other Brahmins in their task because I was in a struggle with myself. So for me, it's crucial that, you know, I came into Gyan in 1984. The first time I actually sat in a practice of self-acceptance was at a 10-day Vipassana retreat, a Buddhist retreat, I thought, I'd need to do this silence. And Baba arrived in my meditation and I did this practice of self-acceptance and it was liberating for me. And that was a turning point in my Brahma life. That was 2010, I think I did that. So my experience of complementarity, which is such a beautiful topic, is that first I need to have that complementarianism, or whatever the word is, within me, between the soul and the part, and then whatever virtues and qualities that part brings, to bring that and to understand, like deeply understand, Baba chose us all because we're different, because we're all misfits. You know, I mean, so that I think is crucial, and then we can offer the best of who we are through whatever part we have in the drama, which is so right and so accurate that we are who we are, authentically who we are.
So complementarity together with authenticity, it's a beautiful topic. So I have one more question that is a little bit tricky. It's a little bit polemic. It's a subject that it's not taking in the Brahmin world. But you know, I like polemic things sometimes because it stretches our capacity to accept. And we are talking about diversity. So we can see that our Brahmin centers are quite open to accept differences of religion, differences of races, differences of opinions, differences of way we dress or way we eat. But what can we do to make our centers more accepting, more inviting for the different genders that we have nowadays? Because nowadays we have at least minimum 7 different genders. Even I don't understand all of them because it's complicated. But how we as Brahma Kumaris, as BK old teachers, what can we do to bring more inclusivity for the question of gender in the world? So very brief, because then I want to take up a last question. So briefly. Yes, Tim.
I don't know.
But I know that in Australia they have, or I think that it's the only place in the world that they have done some retreats for gays and homosexuals and so on. So I think that it's the place that have done already something. No?
Yeah, in the United States there's a lot of issues around using pronouns, you know, which pronouns you use. And one of the things that we're doing in some of our classes is being willing to, you know, just say, I identify as a her or a him or a they, or in allowing that to be there. That's a tiny step, but it's at least an acknowledgement. And I know that in some of our teacher trainings, we've had students who have been vocal about being sat on a sister's side when they don't identify as a sister. And, you know, there is more acceptance in the Brahmin family because, after all, we are souls. We're not bodies. And, you know, the gender identity is a bodily identity. But it's so important to the souls who are marginalized by society that we have to kind of acknowledge that that's something that we're open to accepting, even though our focus has to be soul consciousness. So I don't think we've gone very far in that direction, but I think there's a greater openness and inclusiveness now. I think, going back to complementarity, another word is inclusiveness, that, you know, everybody belongs. Everyone's a soul, right? We have to find ways to bring them to the family and include them and let them find their fortune.
Neville?
Many, many years ago, must have been 40, 50 years ago, I had quite a lot to do with the first man in the UK, possibly in the world, who had the full hormone and surgery treatment to live as a woman. He was Robert Cowell, and he became Roberta Cowell, and he had been a Spitfire pilot in the war and an international racing driver, very macho man, but he felt all of that was a kind of illusion, that really he had that female identity, and he felt a compulsion. You can imagine the difficulties at that time to get everything that allowed him to do this. It was a huge thing. And funnily enough, a person who helped him was born a woman in Ireland and trained as a doctor, who became a man. And she helped Robert to become Roberta. And this experience of Michael Dillon, the doctor, had died by this time, but through Roberta, me and my wife met quite a lot of transsexuals, as they were called in those days. And
it's still called
that sometimes. And it's a bit misleading because it's a gender identity rather than sexual necessarily. But we met quite a lot, and one of the things that struck me at that time was that the gender dysphoria, as it was called technically, you know, where you don't feel you're living the right gender, actually helped these individuals to be very more aware of the spiritual dimension. They didn't identify with that body that they were born with, and funnily enough, that helped them be very insightful about spiritual matters. However, so that said, I mean, and also more recently, I met a photographer who documented the first children in, this was in Holland, and she documented them photographically in their journey, because Holland, I think, was the first country to give contrary hormones before adolescence. So a child would identify with the opposite sex. So instead of allowing them to develop male features, for example, they would, before adolescence set in, they would give them the contrary hormones to keep them, those secondary sexual characteristics from developing. And these children too, their eyes in the photographs, they showed such depth of soul awareness. So there's a beauty to this. At the same time as saying that, I feel as if, just, this is a personal perspective, but I feel it's gone crazy. I feel it's got out of hand, and doctors and others, you know, whereas those that helped those, and still do help sometimes, it's genuine compassion, but it's become a business, you know, that and also virtue signaling, you know, that, if anyone, a child expresses a bit of uncertainty, send them to the gender clinic, you know, and then they may find themselves on a process for changing. I do feel it's gone a bit crazy, but then so many things in Kali Yuga have gone crazy. But I did want to emphasize that at the core of this, there is sometimes this very positive element of not identifying with the gender of birth can help in that process of understanding yourself spiritually. And when me and my wife were doing some of this work and writing about it, we asked Sister Genty about it. And she said, at that time, she said she felt it was because we were in end times, It was an opportunity for souls to settle accounts from both sides of the gender divide, which was an interesting idea.
Yes, maybe to do with previous birth as well, and even the impact of the sanskars from other birth that leads us, and also the question of settling accounts between two people. Sometimes the attraction is just because of the karmic account. Yes, but I feel that our organization is still very limited in the acceptance of this aspect. So, John, just last word about this.
We don't have so much problem in terms of gender crisis. The what we call transversism, that has been felt and that is corrected. Usually it is corrected from a very early age, so that later on the child just knows, yes, they were born with the two or whatever, having two genders, but then one has been taken care of, because most probably the system was more marked on one gender which was preserved. That takes place, but this transgender migration we don't have in our setup. So it is not giving us much of problem, and at the same time we are not, I don't know, we are not so advanced to start making those cosmetic changes. We don't work on those cosmetic things because we feel those are more of cosmetic cosmetic surgeries which people take upon themselves. Those would require definitely the two specialists, surgeons and the whatever, maybe OBS, gynae specialists. Accepting those type of personalities at the center, because they are not easily identified, we don't have any problem. We only say, let this cadre come, let this group of maybe a profession come for such and such. Whoever comes, we look at them and we refer to them as male or female. That is all. That's how we take it on our side. Om Shanti.
Okay, our time is over. So we just finish with one word that can define real harmony for you. Because fake harmony, we know. It's to put under the carpet, not to express yourself, not being real, and then just like Sister Joan said, cosmetic. So fake harmony is just to put cosmetic on the situation. So one word, what is real harmony for you? Who wants to start? Yes, Tamsin.
Looking at another and saying and feeling, I see you.
Acceptance.
Mutual understanding.
Complementarity.
Beautiful. I thank so much my brother and my sisters here, Neville, Joan, Kieran, Tamasin, for being with us this morning, and we can close with one moment of meditation so that we can leave the hall in Baba's remembrance.
Thank you for this provocative question.
Yes, I think we all want to say thank you to Luciana as well, and this wonderful discussion. We really appreciate your depth of trying to go to a place of authenticity in the answers and bring to the surface universal principles which we can all use in order to respect diversity and build harmony for ourselves and our world. So yes, we'll have a minute of silence.